guest, David Rowell, is an editor at the Washington Post magazine and has taught literary journalism at American University. His short stories have been published in several anthologies. His debut novel, The Train of Small Mercies, is receiving strong reviews. Through a series of stories unfolding on a single day, the book provides a memorable snapshot of America at a crucial moment in our history. The day is June 8, 1968, a Saturday when the body of U.S. Senator Robert F. Kennedy is carried by train from New York City to Washington for burial at Arlington National Cemetery. Hundreds of thousands lined the route to pay homage to the presidential candidate. Rowell recreates the day through vivid portraits and a range of characters, black and white, young and old, whose mostly humdrum and ordinary lives turn on events as they set out to watch the train pass. Each of their stories, told in staggered vignettes that begin in the morning, unfold in modest, commonplace settings, and revolve around familiar hopes, fears, schemes, and family dynamics. The period is captured in part by the constant offstage presence of the Kennedys, including the pregnant widow, Ethel Kennedy. As Rowell draws the reader into these lives, the novel becomes more than the sum of its stories. With a deft touch and an eye for telling detail, Rowell creates a memorable mosaic of America. Welcome, David. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thanks very much.
JFK, Martin Luther King, then RFK. I myself was just a kid then, but even my friends at our very young age were terrified that the assassinations would just keep on happening and who would be next. How do you address this national fear in the book?
Well, I think that the characters in the book are definitely overwhelmed with grief and confusion. I mean, you're right, it's just 5 years in which the country's three most prominent leaders, at least of the decade, have all been gunned down. And I think there's just some real confusion about how the country can go forward if everyone who steps up for, you know, the people in the country is going to be killed. So they're not completely without hope, these characters that I've written about, but there is a tremendous amount of despair.
Yeah, your book intertwines six different stories. How did you select the characters?
Well, the characters, the novel is really a kind of fictional response to a book of photographs called RFK Funeral Train by Paul Fusco. And I've been studying this book just as an admirer for years, and so when I decided that I wanted to write a novel, I decided that I would write about these characters and let all the details, to the extent that was possible, let the details really come from the people in these pictures. I mean, ultimately it was going to be, you know, as any novel is, a work of imagination, but I wanted the foundation for these stories to come from these people that I've been looking at for so many years.
Yeah. My mother actually saw the FDR funeral train. I mean, what a different mood in the country.
Right. People remember the FDR funeral train and the Lincoln funeral train in terms of historians, and those are the ones that we think of. Even though 2 million people turned up to the tracks on this day in June 8, 1968, mostly it's a forgotten moment of history, and I think a lot of people know a lot about John Kennedy, and you know, I think these days not a lot of people know a lot about Robert Kennedy. So as I was doing the research and writing about these characters who were very affected by this day, you know, it felt great to be reminding people, even though it's a novel, but reminding people what Robert Kennedy stood for and what his vision of America was.
Yeah. In your research for the book, you interviewed a Washington Post reporter who had actually been on the train. Can you share some stories he told you about that day?
Right. David Broder was one of the great American reporters ever, and the newspaper pieces that he had written about the funeral train were greatly helpful to me. I mean, he made me understand how difficult an assignment it was for all reporters who were covering Robert Kennedy, in part because there was a real sense that Kennedy was not going to make it, that someone was going to stop him. And in fact, Kennedy had said at some point, "I think there are guns between me and the White House." And so that made for a very somber mood of the reporters. And so on this day, when they're on the funeral train, as crushed as they were, and as people who followed Kennedy were all over, there was also not a great sense of shock among reporters. So he was just really helpful in helping me understand how people felt that day. And also he gave me a lot of useful details about the train itself. Not a lot has been written about the funeral train, and some of that information was hard to find. So having David here in the building was a great resource for me.
Well, which of the family members were actually on the train?
Well, let's see. Well, Ethel, certainly. And Ethel was pregnant with her 11th child at the time. And so all the children, as I understand it, were on the train. And certainly Ted Kennedy spent a fair amount of time at the very back of the train, basically on the caboose, waving to the crowds and thanking them, you know, as the train moved past through all these towns on the Eastern Seaboard.
Was Jackie Kennedy on the train?
I've never read that she was, but it's possible. I've just she must have been. Yes, you know, she must have been, because she was certainly at the burial.
All right. Well, how can you compare America on the Robert Kennedy's assassination day with America on 9/11?
Well, there's certainly two different types of tragedies. I mean, there's a whole generation that has lived with this threat of terrorism, and of course that's its own difficult and awful experience. I think, though, there is a real difference, because back in the 60s, our leaders were literally gunned down, and I think that's just a reality that a lot of people can't, a younger generation can't quite conceive of. I mean, I think that the threat of terrorism, it's easier, I think, to go through the day-to-day and for that threat maybe to feel a little bit distant. But when your president has been killed, and then someone running for president has been killed, and then Martin Luther King, who was, you know, trying to unite all of America, were killed, I mean, I just think it's hard to compare. It's hard to say one is more difficult than the other, but I think it's certainly true that this period, 1968, is certainly one of the most difficult times in U.S. history, and maybe second only to the Civil War, because remember, after Martin Luther King is killed, there are, I think, 119 cities that are just destroyed in riots from coast to coast.
Oh, well, you've been getting a lot of good reviews, so what's your next writing project?
Well, the next novel is something entirely different. This novel was set in one day, the next novel was set in a week, whereas the first novel has so many characters and so many stories going on, I'm going to do something quite different, which is the setting is a family beach trip in North Carolina, and so I have these six characters to focus on, and so there's something quite nice about having more space for, you know, fewer characters and really getting to do even more character development. So the second novel takes place in a week. If there's a third book, maybe it'll take place in a month. If there's a fourth book, a year. Then maybe that will be it.
Do you have a working title for the second novel?
Well, I do. Right now I call it The Sound of Waves.
David, thanks so much. I have to say I really enjoyed your novel. It's a wonderful, poignant look at actually a terrible day in American history, but you made it really poignant. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you. Great to talk to you.
Alrighty, bye.